Blog Talk Radio.
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
Numbers aren't looking good for him.
Okay.
And usually when you see something isn't going your way, you go with what you know. And unfortunately, what my opponent knows is how to suppress the vote. He spent the last 10 years, the last decade, fighting against the right to vote. And when he finally got the reins of power in 2010, he took it to a whole new level. This is someone who arrested a woman and charged her with a felony for helping her blind mother cast the ballot. This is a man who in 2016, we took him to court, Francis and I, with some good friends, and we got a federal judge to tell him to stop suppressing the vote. He had illegally canceled 33,000 voters in the state of Georgia. And a federal judge said that is illegal and made him put them back on the rolls. But the problem is, he's got power. And so what he did...
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Noah. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Sandy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It sounds like we're having a little technical difficulty here.
I wasn't sure if it was my phone or if it was something else, but I'm glad it was on that end and not my phone, so I don't want to lose you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're having a little technical difficulty.
Okay. Do we have anyone else on the line? Do you know?
Daniel is on his way. He's just leaving.
I'm here, Ms. Snow. It's Pam.
Hey, Pam. How
Hello?
Are you? Good evening.
Yeah,
did you hear me?
For a minute, we're having a little technical difficulty here.
Okay.
Pam, don't hang up, Pam.
Don't hang up.
Me?
Just hang with us.
Yeah.
Okay, I can hear both of you, though, Mr. Noel.
Okay, good.
You can hear? Okay. Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's show. Welcome to, this is WAMRDG Radio, Atlanta's mixed radio station, the woman station. I'm glad everybody joined us in tonight. We're looking to have a very robust conversation tonight, and we want you all to call in and be a part of the conversation. Joining me on this conversation tonight will be Mr. Noah Robertson, and in a little bit, Mr. Daniel Blackman will be joining us. Tonight's topic, the election is only 4 days away, and tonight's topic is dealing with the election. Show up or shut up, men, millennials, and voting. Now, before we get started with tonight's program and conversation, I'd like to talk just a little bit about news I just heard in the headlines, where a judge has ordered the Secretary of State to allow the voters that have been rejected based on the Georgia exact match rule. And that was all the voters that had been flagged because they were saying they were non-citizens and that their names or their information was not an exact match as to what they had in the driver's license, driver's bureau, and on the Social Security. So that's a good thing that the judge decided to, yes, let's let these people vote. Let's stop taking this vote away from people. It's been a very, very busy week this week. We've had Oprah in town yesterday. We had President Obama in town today. We've had all types of celebrities and people in town coming in supporting Stacey Abrams. We even had Killmonger from Wakanda come in and canvass for Stacey. So let's give a hand because, you know, this is something that's real important that's going on. And, you know, let's talk about it. Before we get started, Noah, you want to introduce yourself to our guest that's not familiar with you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, my name is Noah Robinson. I am no celebrity. I am a common man. I have my opinions on multiple topics, as I hope that our guests that come on tonight will have the same, have your honest opinions. We look forward to your feedback. I don't know that there is any right or wrong statements made tonight. This is what you believe based on what the topic is. I would only say this, and that is that we try to stay on topic tonight, if at all possible, because of the political frustrations that we all might share. We might have a tendency to drift off and go on a tangent, especially as it relates to, I'll just say it as it is, relates to 45. I will not
exactly.
I won't even dignify with name, but just as it relates to 45. So let's try and stay on topic. I will say this full disclosure up front. I have already voted. Okay. So I had to make sure I got mine in. I don't want to hear about, well, it was raining. Okay, and we've had plenty of time to vote. So with that being said, I shut up now and leave it up to any of our guests. Pam, who happens to be a friend of mine, we work together. Pam, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello? Okay. Yeah,
hi, Pam.
And I
welcome to the show tonight.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. Thank you for the support, Pam. You want to add anything in opening?
Oh, yes. My name is Pamela, as Mr. Noel, he put it out there that he was having this talk show tonight. And, you know, if he's in, I'm in. So I will follow him to the end. He's a great man. He says he's just a normal person. He is a phenomenal person. He was in the military, too. He served for us as well. So he's more than just normal man. Believe that.
Thank you.
You're definitely right about that. He's definitely somebody you want to have on your team. Definitely.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Well,
go ahead, Mr. No. What were you about to say?
I'm blushing.
Oh.
I can see it.
I'm soaking it all up. But go ahead, guys. All right.
Go ahead, Pam. What were you saying?
Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
I have voted as well, so I've done that also.
Good.
But on the topic that you mentioned about the what were you saying they voted in that they can vote how? Can you repeat that? Because I kind of heard it on the little voicemail when I was coming through. What do you mean by that? They don't have the IDs don't match and the names. That can get kind of confusing.
The Secretary of State had pulled the voter registration of I think it was like over 100,000 people, and these were people that had flagged as non-citizen or potential non-citizen, and they had pulled their registrations because they said, based on this new Georgia rule, it was not an exact match. What that means, if they have your name spelled Mary, M-A-R-Y, but you spell your name Mary, M-A-R-I, then that's not an exact match.
If you have
a last name that's hyphenated and they don't hyphenate it, it's not an exact match. And all that is the same thing as it was in Jim Crow with how many bubbles in a bar soap, how many gumballs in this big jar. You know, it's the same principle. But the judge today ruled that these people need to be allowed, these voters need to be allowed to vote. They need to allow these registrations in. So that was a big win for us, because so much has been going on to restrict the vote. We had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago about knowing that if your vote is valuable, that's why they're stealing it. If it didn't have any value to it, that's why it's so important to get out here and vote. And speaking of voting, go ahead.
Okay. No, you go ahead and finish. Go ahead. I go ahead. I thought you were done.
No,
go ahead.
I was getting ready to move on with the show, but go ahead.
Go ahead,
I actually work the polls. I'm one of the volunteer. Well, it's not volunteer. We actually do get paid. A lot of people think that we don't, but it's not truly volunteer. They're getting paid for that job they're doing. But that is a true fact that you did. Everything does have to match, and it's not, because when they write it on that paper, because I would tell people, because they would do it, like if you're on your driver's license, if it has a JR on it, like junior, you have to write it that way on the paper. That's for anybody, no matter, you know, what nationality you are. It's for everybody, and I've had, you know, people have been turned around because of them not doing it right. And I tell them, you know, you have to do it the way that it is on your license. And that's when they sit down and they do it, because it's got to match.
What this had more to do with was when the workers are inputting the information into the computer, and if your name is hyphenated, and they, in the process of doing it, they don't put the hyphen in there, then that's not, you put your name wrong. They entered it wrong, but it's there.
When they voted on the voter card.
Right.
So if it's not an exact match, that's what's going on with that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're doing it wrong on the voter card, which causing them a problem. Okay.
Exactly.
Let me inject something here, because this is very much, we aren't even on topic yet, very much a true story, personal to me. The last time we were to vote, I went to vote at my normal polling place, and they couldn't find me anywhere. I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean you can't find me? They didn't have me anywhere in the state, nothing. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So what
they
I
did
ended
a national
doing,
search.
No, I had to do a submitted a provisional ballot, I guess that's what they call it, and they mailed
right,
it in.
Right, a provisional ballot.
A provisional ballot. And I was really upset about that. So I said, you know what? It is important that I'm able to vote. Let me go and get this thing straight. I went to the voter registration location in the, at the county seat here in Henry County, and they pulled it up. They had somebody had transposed my birthday incorrectly. Fortunately, I took all my ID and I had my birth certificate with me. And I said, we're going to get this straight. The man was very nice. I'm not going to discount this him. He was doing what the card said that he had. That's why I couldn't vote. We got it straight, and no problem, I was able to vote. But the thing of it is that if you don't fight for yourself, if you don't, if you just sit back and say, oh, well, then your vote doesn't count. And I'm like, oh, no, this is too important. My vote's going to count. I have as much power as Barack Obama does when you go into the voting booth. If it makes sense,
you don't speak up. You don't happen.
Like we said, if your vote wasn't valuable, they wouldn't try to steal it.
That's true. We need to keep that in mind.
You know, for all the elections that's coming up. Today was the last day for early voting. And
correct.
So far, they've been able to tally around 20 million early voters, early votes in. And
the
majority of those votes are coming from women and older voters. There's 34.7% of these voters have been age 65 and older. Okay. Other early voters, 56% have been women, and only 9% have been under 30, which is what they will call the
millennials.
The millennials. So that brings us to the topic of our show tonight, our program, our discussion tonight. Shut up. Men, millennials, and voting. And based on those statistics that we just received, we're going to start the conversation in just a minute, but I'd like to welcome Mr. Daniel Blackman, everybody. He just joined us. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
Can you hear us? Daniel?
Huh?
Are you still there, Pam?
Daniel may have to just come back on.
Let me start off on the topic, if you don't mind, because I've been thinking about it all day. Show up or shut up is, I don't know that you can say any more than that with regards to voting. If you don't show up, showing up means vote. Okay, that's to me what showing up is, number one. You've got to go vote. And if you don't vote, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it like it is. Don't say a damn thing to me about what's going on. I don't want to hear it. You don't have the right to gripe. You don't have the right to complain. You don't have the right at all. You didn't earn it because you didn't vote. Simple as that.
You know, you would think that by us getting President Barack Obama into our presidency, you would think they would think that their vote counts. Why wouldn't it count?
Yes.
How you think he got in there? Because we showed up because he was black. So therefore, just because of that one person that you wanted in there, guess what? The next person you can make a choice to be coming there. That's the whole gist. You think your vote, how can your vote count one year but not another year?
Yeah.
They're just making excuses because they don't feel that it's somebody they want to vote for, but you got to vote in the better of the choice that you feel about.
This is not a national election. These are state elections. And I think mm-hmm. that gets to be confusing, or the importance of the election becomes less with some people because it is not in a national thing. We're not replacing 45. I would hope that we get 100% participation when 45 comes up in 2020. But right now, this is a referendum in a sense on 45, but it is not a replacement election on 45. So henceforth, I think the enthusiasm for the election, for this current election, is somewhat stemming from 45, but it is not a referendum to remove 45. Is that making any sense to anyone?
Is that what you're saying, Noah? Regardless of what is the referendum on, what is the reason, or what do you think the reason is, or do you think that there's a deficiency in the number of male voters and in the number of millennial voters? You know, what is
Absolutely.
It that we are not that
they,
we're not reaching them?
I think that what Mr. Noel said, they don't understand that these are important perspectives to be able to vote in the House, the House of
yes.
Representatives and all this other stuff. They don't realize that just the governors and the mayors and stuff, the senators, they don't realize that they have something to do with our opinions up in the – because that's how President Obama couldn't get things done, because the Republicans had more of them in the House to get votes against him. They don't understand that perspective, and I say that because I think
so
I recently
–
not
that women mm-hmm. – Pam, are you saying that
Go
women
ahead.
Understand
mm-hmm.
it better than men?
Yes.
Because the question is not whether it's understood or not. It's what are the men out here voting? Are the millennials out here voting? And if they are not, you know, why are they not
yes.
out here voting? You know,
because
it
was a guy.
The numbers that we have, you know, 9%, the millennials are the ones in the age range between 22 and 36. And
mm-hmm.
9% of this 20 million early votes that we've had in this early voting in this campaign that's going on right now, only 9% have been in that millennium generation. And 56% has been women. Where are the millennials?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the men? And based on what you're saying, it's almost like you're saying women understand it better than men, so they know they need to vote in these elections.
Mm-hmm. That is
I
correct. Even the, go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. No.
I would venture to say, I want to go back in some history, all right? For those of us that are of this age, okay, for those of us that are of this age, we can go back to Bill Clinton, okay? We can remember how things were under Clinton. We saw how things transitioned into Bush twice. The millennials have no clue about how things were with Clinton, no more than what somebody told them, and how things transitioned with Bush. They came on board. If they're 22 years old, guess what? They're eligible to vote. What history are they pulling on? What I wrote it down. What is their issue? We have issues at our age because we have history to draw on. But what is the issue for the millennium? Okay, their wages are far better, even though it's not totally $15 an hour. But their wages are better than what our wages were. So what are they complaining about?
Daniel, I think Daniel's back on the line with us. Daniel, hi, are you on the line?
Guess not.
Daniel?
You get technical difficulties.
Yeah, I guess we're still having technical difficulties.
Okay.
With Daniel. All
right.
Yeah, because Daniel,
okay.
I wanted Daniel to speak up on that. He's a millennial,
right.
And I wanted to hear what he had to say. But go ahead, Pam.
Now, I have my daughter. She's downstairs. I can get her in on this, too. She did vote already, though. She's one of
okay.
the ones. She understands it totally.
And how
y'all go
how
ahead.
Old
I'm
going
to tell
daughter?
Her to get on. She's 29.
Good. Good,
and
good.
See,
I
my son, he's not. He doesn't want to vote. I'm forcing him to vote. I'm forcing him to vote. He's 29 also. I mean, he's 30, rather. He's 30. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But I'm going. I'm making him go vote. He was
but
not
why
going
does he,
to. Now, all the others, he doesn't feel his
do
vote
you,
counts.
Uh-huh.
That's why. He doesn't feel his vote counts. He's like, it doesn't matter what I think. But I've always made him vote. He's voted in the past, okay? But this time he's trying
okay.
to be like, mm-mm. But I'm making him vote. But she went and voted with me. But let me, you guys go ahead and talk. I'm going to get her on the line, too, so we can get
okay.
some more of a. Okay, hold on.
I would like to hear a millennium perspective. Because
yeah,
the millennium.
Daniel is on the line. We're having some technical problems with it. I just got a text from him. He's on. He can hear us talking, but we can't hear him talking. So we're trying
okay.
to get that taken care of.
All right. Well, we'd very much like to have his feedback from him if he's a millennium, because the
right.
millennium vote is the vote that's going to get, if you are inclined to vote for African Americans, not in particular, or the Democratic Party, let's put it like that. The millenniums are the ones that will get us over them. Old folks, we're going to go out there and vote because we understand the history of voting. I think us older folks, we understand the value of the vote. And even then, you're not going to get 100%, okay? But what is the issue for the millenniums? I don't know. I really, really don't know. I don't hang out with millenniums. I don't have any millenniums in my family, okay, that I'm close to, well, let's say that I'm really close to, that I can have this open dialogue with, shall we say, voting
right.
dialogue. I've got two that are in California, you know, but somebody there? Okay.
No.
We're getting background noise. Okay, that must be Pam. Yeah, it must be Pam. So.
Yes, my daughter's on. My daughter's on.
Okay.
Brittany, announce yourself.
Hello?
Do you have it on mute or something? I can hear you talking downstairs. I can't hear. Can you hear her, Mr. Mel?
I can't
no.
hear her at all.
She's talking. Hold on, guys. Hold on.
Okay.
But we have to try to figure out, but as not being a millennium, you are a male, Noah. So what do you think?
Excuse me, guys.
Hi,
something's wrong with the incoming calls, because she is talking to you guys, but she can't. Mm. We can't hear her. Something's
okay.
wrong with the line.
All right.
Yeah, because I'm the.
We'll ask her to work on it.
She can hear Mr. Noel when she has you on speaker.
Okay.
I can hear you talking to. Wow. But you just can't hear her.
We can't hear her.
I don't hear it at all. Uh-uh.
Yeah, she's saying hello right now, but I can hear me echoing.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well we're I'm getting it checked on. So we let's go ahead and just keep moving along. And this is this new age technology.
I got it. You asked me the question about men. I don't know that I have an answer for that. I don't know that I have the answer about men voting, in specifics, African-American men. I can come up with a lot of possible theories, but I think voting is an individual thing. One of my primary reasons as an African-American man, and you've heard it said many times, and Oprah just said it yesterday herself, if you don't vote, then you are dishonoring your family. Hello. I got noise
in
the background.
I'm here.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello? We got Brittany?
Yes, this
hello?
Is Brittany.
Okay,
yes.
Brittany.
Hi, Brittany. Yes. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Good to have you.
Thanks.
Want to ask her the question? Brittany,
yeah,
we're
talking about the election that's going on right now, and one of the things is there's been 20 million early votes, and out of that 20 million, only 9% have come from the millennials, from your generation. So we're trying to find out exactly what's going on with your generation that we can't get you guys out here to vote.
Well, I think, well, amongst us, I am amongst the ones that do vote, but I do have a lot of conversations with my friends and everything and listen to their opinions, and they have a lot of issues with the system and how the voting is set up and everything like that, which I do agree with, but at the same time, it is still an opportunity for us to get out and try to impact our community. Like, most of the people that I know, if they do vote, they'll only vote for presidential elections. And mm-hmm. I try to explain to them that, you know, while voting for the presidential election is great, but the immediate impact that you have is in your community and the, you know, smaller general elections and the Senate and the House and everything like that, because those are the people that directly influence you, be it your governor and everyone else. So, you know, a lot of them have issues with, like, the whole premise of the Electoral College, because, like, with this past election, that's mm-hmm. the only way we ended up with the president that we have, because he did not mm-hmm. win the popular mm-hmm. vote, as several mm-hmm. years ago with, mm-hmm. who was that, Bush and Gore, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, a situation where he did not win the popular vote. However, mm-hmm. because of the Electoral College and how the numbers are larger for the larger states or more heavily populated states that skews their vote, their opinion, when it may not necessarily be representative of everyone there. So with the Electoral College, a lot of people my age do have an issue with that because they say that it's not fair representation of how they feel. So why should I vote if they're just going to, you know, fill in the blank? Why should I vote if they're just going to do what they want anyway? Why should I vote if my vote doesn't count because of the Electoral College and everything else like that? They're like, well, I'm in Georgia, and it's a red state, so it doesn't matter, kind of thing. That's the ideas that you're getting from people within my generation. And then, two, a lot of them are very adamant about where they stand politically. However, there's not enough information about the people that are running for office, especially with, like, the governor races and the sheriffs and the judges and everyone else that we're voting for. It's like, well, how do I find the information in regards to what you stand for? I don't want to just vote for you, just be on the premise of you being a Democrat or a Republican. You know, I want to see what it is that your principles are and see if they are aligned with my personal interests. But
you're talking,
with this day and age, I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. You're talking about this, how the millennial gets their information. Is that what you're saying? Or how you garner your information
on
a candidate?
I'm more so about the lack of information that is available. When it's a presidential campaign, you know, when it's a presidential election, they do a lot of campaigning. They put the information out there that they want you to know. But in, like, governor's races and sheriffs and judges and everything else like that, you don't get as much information up front. You know, you may have one or two debates that may or may not be canceled, but you don't get that information readily available to you. And it's like, well, if you don't thoroughly search for it, with even then, I've gone to some of the websites and it's just like, hey, vote for this person because of, you know, maybe one premise that they're fighting for. But it's like, okay, well, in terms of everything else, what's your policies on education? You know, what are we doing about the social justice? I mean, the justice system, is there any reform going on there? What's your stance on marijuana? What's your stance on, you know, medical benefits and disability and veterans' rights and everything else? You're not telling me these things that are going to directly impact my family. Like, I have nieces and nephews in school. I want to know about what your opinion is on our education system and how you being there is going to assist with bettering that system. You know, things like that we don't we don't get that information. And so because of that, a lot of millennials have an issue because they're like, well, I have opinions, but there's no one out there that represents my opinion, so I'm just not going to vote. Because even
if
you
say that you don't get that information, how is it that you're thinking that other people are getting that information, but the millennials aren't getting it? Is it because it's
not
being sent to you? Huh?
I'm not certain.
That's some background noise.
Yeah, we got background noise. It's not from me because I'm totally shut down.
Yeah.
No, there's nothing in my background.
There's nothing in my background. Can you hear me?
Okay.
We got
cleared up. Daniel, are you on now?
I'm here. If you can hear me, I've kind of been on a little bit.
We got Daniel on the line.
There we go.
I hear you.
I'm on the line.
Thank you. Welcome. Let's take
a quick second
to. Let Daniel introduce himself and tell us a little bit about him, and then we'll go right back to our conversation.
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be with you guys. I am very fortunate to have been a part of the rally tonight with Stacey Abrams and President Obama and the other candidates down the ballot. I was formerly appointed to two White House initiatives under the Obama administration. Locally, I'm the chair of the 7th Congressional District in the state of Georgia. In 2016, I was Bernie Sanders' political director in the state of Georgia. And I do policy work and advocacy around the country and around the state. And this conversation is very near and dear to my heart because I have children and I have a young brother that's 20. I have a niece and so many family members that are millennials. And I think this conversation is important. And I'll say this real quick so we can tie back into the conversation. But what the young lady said just now, she hit the nail on the head. It's the messaging. It's not that the issues aren't out there. It's how they're being articulated to young people. You know, 88% of Georgia's prison population reads at a third grade level. You know, and when you have issues that we're talking about, like expanding, you know, Medicaid in the state, or talking about, you know, the opioid crisis, we're speaking to issues that at times are not directly impacting them. And then when we do give the message, we're making these messages without having them at the table. And what I mean by that is I spoke to a group in North Georgia a couple of weeks ago, and the first question I asked them was, how many young people do you have in your party or on your or a part of your county party or that are advisors to you? And, you know, in the room, everybody in there, you know, and no disrespect to their ages, but everybody in there was 55 and up. And when you have rooms that are creating, you know, the message, but there's not a young person to manage social media, or there's not a political science student from Morehouse College, it's hard for the generational gap to be connected. So I think she's spot on. One thing we can do that I've worked closely with Stacey Abrams on is hearing from them and working to give their message and their voice as more of a platform. Obama did a great job of it because he ran a campaign that was very youth-oriented, and he brought out a lot of folks that, you know, young people identified with, like Usher and John Legend and different people that, you know, helped to carry the message. So I think the conversation is needed, and I'm excited about what we can do in the next 4 days.
You spoke about the message. Is part of the problem that we don't have the right messenger for the millennials?
Combination, because I'll tell you right now, you know, Bernie Sanders is 70 years old, and he resonated with a lot of young people, a lot of millennials. I don't think it's the messenger as much. I think that, you know, of course, young people want people they can identify with, but they also want something different. They don't, you know, and I'll give you a quick example. I do a lot of work with athletes and entertainers, and one of the big things right now that's going on is social justice. So, you know, and we just saw a tragic incident that happened in Pittsburgh at the Tree of Life location with the shooting at the synagogue, right? But now I want you to think about this, right? Look at how much coverage that has gotten. Look at how much of a debate it is. Look at how much uproar it is. But when Colin Kaepernick takes a knee on a social justice side, we might have a debate about it, but it's a news cycle versus an issue that we're saying this is what we're going to do. Now, granted, we have a president that has continued to put kneeling and athletes at the forefront of the conversation, but what happens is, you know, 94% of black folks vote Democrat. And I'm a Democrat, and I'm a congressional district chair. But the problem we're having is, as it relates to black issues, there's sound bites, and they happen during an election season. Well, we don't need to just get Stacey Abrams elected. Between 2018 and 2020, we need to be educating folks. We can't keep educating people while folks are on the ballot. Donald Trump has appointed more judges at the federal level and at the local level federal level and the Supreme Court than any other president, the last two presidents combined. These young people are concerned about criminal justice. And if you look at what's going on with marijuana becoming an enterprise now, we have young black and brown boys in prison right now serving sentences for what is now legal. So we need to now shift that message because it is affecting young people, you know, and we need to start speaking to their issues and allowing them to understand it. But here's the key, helping them to understand how to steer the conversation so that we can give them the tools they need, but then they become advocates and ambassadors of our message.
Then how do we use the social media platform, which is obviously prevalent? How do we use the social media of the social? Damn, I'm getting tongue tied here. How do we use
I got you.
To get how do we use that? Because everybody's got a phone. Everybody's on Facebook. Everybody's on Snapchat and whatever the other ones are. Me personally, I don't understand half of them anyway. But that's because I'm an older person. I'm an older person, okay? Quite frankly, I just assume go back to carbon paper and carrier pigeons, all right, to get the message out. But I'm joking.
You're saying
about
how
it,
to use those social media.
Yeah, how do you sell it? How do I reach the millennium that is now 25?
Here's the thing. I've written a book on nationalism, and you bring up a good point. And I asked Bernice King, I said, what did your father do differently? What did Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. do during the civil rights movement that you think is so different, given the fact that he didn't have Twitter, he didn't have Instagram, he didn't have Facebook, but they still organized, they still marched, they still boycotted. And what Bernice said was that we had the power, the structure, and the influence of the church. And the black church in 1968 and 1958, the black church in the 50s and the 60s was not just a place you went on Sunday. It was a place where you can be educated and you can share information and gather information and share ideas. So what we're missing now is not so much just to reinvent the church. It's more so how do we have these spaces where young people are invited out and they help us? Like, I'll give you an example. I would never, you know, I do a lot of work around human trafficking, but I've never been a victim of human trafficking. I've never been, you know, physically or sexually abused in a sense that I would be categorized as someone in that space. So I would never assume that I can tell the story of a survivor better than a survivor. So we need to go to these young people. I was just at a conference called A3C, which stands for All Three Coasts. And they had this one young man that had 500 million views on YouTube. And this young man has a camera and a basement and a bunch of ideas. Those are the kind of people we need to invite in. Rather than saying we want to just use these platforms, let's go to the influencers. If there's a young man in Southwest Atlanta that has, you know, 20,000 followers on Instagram, then our job is to go seek that young man out and bring him into a room and ask him how we can use his reach to you know, kind of carry our message. So I think on the one hand, you're right, we need to think of a new strategy as it relates to social media, but I don't think we need to become the experts. I think we need to stay in our lanes and help to filter it. So,
go ahead.
Okay, we had another caller come in.
No, this is Brittany. I just wanted to kind of say something about that. I believe that's a really good point, especially for millennials, is to kind of reach them where they are, because the old way of doing things and campaigning and marching and rallying and everything is great. Don't get me wrong, and we acknowledge and respect that, but not everybody has that option to mobilize and, you know, get off of work and go participate in these marches and everything else. We don't have that, but like you said, everybody has a phone. Everybody has some form of social media one way or another, and there are influencers that aren't necessarily celebrities, but those are the people that I think as millennials that we find influential, because it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, this person is trending. What are they talking about? Why is this important? Okay, 150 million people have watched this. What's going on? Oh, it's a cat video. Whatever. Like, you know? Like,
exactly.
it's just
right.
something that, because it is coming from people of, quote, influence, that we don't know and not necessarily would recognize, but it's making people listen and pay attention. I think
that's
that
right.
people in the political realm are not really taking advantage of that because it is different from what they're used to. Because they're used to, you know, when they're in their generation, how they, you know, did the rallies and did the marches and had the conventions and everything, those things don't work for us. And no one has really gotten it really well to change that perspective of, okay, well, how are we reaching out to, you know, the younger generation? And I also think, too, getting more millennials involved in politics, running for different, like the young lady in New York, you know, running for different political offices and everything like that, because no offense to the baby boomers and the generation X or Y or whatever you are, you know,
would it make a difference,
Brittany? Yes.
Brittany, let me interrupt you right quick and ask you, does it make a difference who that millennial is that's running? Because if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, a year or so ago, when they was having the campaign for the mayor of Stonecrest,
Mary Pat Hector.
Hector,
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
She was running.
Mm-hmm.
She's a millennial.
Okay.
She was running. She was, and there seemed to be more baby boomers supporting her. Not saying that all her supporters were baby boomers, but there were more baby boomers supporting her than there were millennials. And she was a millennial candidate.
Let me
yes.
ask you this: Who, mm-hmm. Brittany, and it's Ron, right? Who is the Dr. King of this generation?
There isn't one.
There isn't a Dr. King. No.
Is there a need for a Dr. King of this generation?
I think leadership is more non-traditional. The preachers of the civil rights movement, in many forms, are the TIs and the, you know, 2 Chainz, some of these more socially conscious guys. I don't think that there is a Dr. King. Now, these folks are looking at a Colin Kaepernick, for instance, but Colin Kaepernick, if you look back at what Muhammad Ali did or somebody like, you know, Harry Belafonte back during the movement, these guys,
right.
you know, they didn't grow up in these spaces where they're taking on the embodiment of it, but people are making them into wanting to be these leaders. So I think it's more so this generation doesn't have a Dr. King, but they have a bunch of influencers that are disconnected from a dying generation.
I am not a supporter in a certain way of Colin Kaepernick, not because of what he was fighting for or what he believed
of course.
in, but you know why? Because
he said he didn't vote.
He
yeah.
didn't vote. And I felt the same way about Kanye West, who I think is an idiot, but that's okay if he's got a mental problem or he's sick, he's bipolar, whatever. If you didn't vote,
but isn't that what we just said the show was? Show up
if
or
you
shut up.
Show up or shut up. Now
show up or shut up. And that's what's happening.
Yep.
You know, people are not showing up. And you know, it's hard for me to listen because I want to listen. I want to know what the millennials are doing. I want to be a part. I want to be a part of it. You know,
yes,
I even try to pretend like I'm a millennial sometimes.
Yes.
But I need for you guys to want it just as hard, you know, to want to get that information out to me.
Well, can
a
I,
lot
can
of
I share
times
something
when,
with you, though?
Huh?
Can I share something though? Like, I have a question for you. What have you done? Like, is for anyone on the call, as far as going
mm-hmm.
to where they are, because that's one of the biggest issues. It's easy for us to say that because I agree with you. I was very disappointed when I heard Colin Kaepernick's statement on voting. However, these young kids, in many respects, are not in some of the places. Like, they're not on college campuses. They're not going to be
right.
at the Civil Rights meeting or the NAACP meeting or the Urban League meeting. Where are some of the places that you guys have gone? Because I'm going to be honest with you, these kids are really hungry for it. But again, there's no cornerstone in the community anymore. There's not a Mrs. Johnson up the street that's keeping them straight. And unfortunately, these kids are in space and they're smart kids, but we can say we're engaging them. But I mean, even myself, I had to realize I wasn't doing a good enough job in going to where they were and spending a lot of time listening. And they could definitely do more, but I think it's also upon us to figure out where they are and try to think more about how we can engage them.
I had a conversation with one of my neighbors. He's 18, 19 years old. And every day when I would leave out during the summer, when it was warmer, he would just be standing outside. And I stopped and talked to him one day, and I wanted to know, you know, what's your name? What are you doing? And he started talking about all the things that he would like to do, but what
yes,
he
ma'am.
Did for money was sold drugs. And he started talking mm-hmm. about how he was selling the drugs and everything. And I started talking to him about, you have some other skills. You just don't realize you have those other skills. And he said,
that's right.
He said, I need to go back to school because I didn't even finish high school. And I say, do you want to go back to school? Because it's one thing to need something. I said, it's another thing to want something. And is that what you want to do? And I sit there and I talk with him, and I told him all those skills he used in marketing and being able to handle his product. I said, take and change that product to something else that's not going to send you to jail.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
go back to school and learn something. I saw him about 3 weeks ago. I was coming in, and he was like, hey, how you doing? I'm good. How you doing? He said, I listened to what you said, and I'm going to school. I'm just coming home from my GED class. And
wow.
I felt good about that. And I think that more of us need to get out of the fear, because I'm going to be honest with you. I do have a certain fear. I talked to my friends, and we said, well, I'm not going there because it's going to be a lot of young people there, and it's going to be a lot of violence, and I don't feel like going and having to deal with violence. And it doesn't even have to be – it can be during the summer they had concerts in the park. They have movie night in the park. A lot of those places have places you can go and just have free movies for the community and stuff. But people are afraid to go because there's things that's going on. But you don't want to say you're afraid to go because you want to go and you want to be out there. I like the music. I like Cardi B. You know, that's one of my, you know, I sit and sing it, you know. I love more than just the music. There's a lot of stuff going on that I like. I try to get kids involved in doing stuff. Everybody wants to make a movie, wants to make a music video and be in front of the camera. I'm like, why not get behind the camera? So I agree with you. There are a lot of things we need to two-way street. We need to reach out, because I can reach out my hand to you, but you got to reach out your hand to me also. Because I can't, otherwise I'm just grabbing on you. But if you reach out your hand, then we can hold each other's hand, and I can pull you and you can pull me, and we can get closer together and understand. Because you guys are going to be the one that's going to be taking care of me. I do it for a very selfish reason. You know, you guys are going to be the one taking care of me. And then you guys are the ones that's going to make it okay, or I'm depending on you to make it okay for my little 2- and 3-year-old niece that I have coming up right now. So I want to reach out to you. I want to know what I have to do.
And I just wanted to say something in regards to what you were saying about the education. You know, I commend you for reaching out to the young man that was standing outside and, you know, encouraging him to do something different with his life and, you know, acknowledging his skill set. I have a background in psychology, and specializing in behavior modification, and I did a lot of work with children and everything in difficult communities when I was down in Statesboro. But one thing that I do would like to mention is you were saying to go back to school and, you know, to do something with those skills, which I believe is very good advice, but it is also very double-sided because education is pushed so significantly right now that I'm not going to lie, I have a bachelor's degree. I have 36 hours into my master's degree, and good. I work with people straight out of high school. I make $13 an hour at a warehouse. Like, I can't get a job in my field. It's oversaturated. Everything in counseling and psychology, you have to have a master's. You have to have so many years of experience on top of that, and plus continued education and everything. It's like, it's really, it's you know, the society encourages us to go to school and continue our education. But then once we do, it doesn't put us any further ahead like it used to be. Like, it used to be such a great advantage and, you know, increase in income and living sustainability and everything when you went and furthered your education. But now it's not the same impact. Like, I feel like my bachelor's degree is the equivalent of, like, a high school diploma right now.
I didn't say for him to just go back to school. I wanted him to go back to school to get an education and work for himself, work for himself, because I am a firm believer in entrepreneurship. And I think that, you know, in order to run your own business, and I don't care whether it's a hair salon or a barbershop or a catering service, whatever it is, you have to have the basic education, you know. So when you're telling me that you're having problems with your reading or you're having problems with your math, you can count dollars, but you don't understand percentages and stuff, yeah, go back to school, get your basic education, but also go to work for yourself. Because I tell people all the time, I don't think it makes sense to go to school and get to go for a master. I mean, if that's what you want to do, then go for your master's and go for your doctorate, you know, if that's what you want to do. But even when you do that, don't go for it looking for somebody else to hire you based on your credentials. Be prepared to even using your master's or your doctorate and go to work for yourself, because I guarantee you, you will never get rich. You will never receive that inner peace, that inner happiness you're trying to achieve by going to work, working for somebody else. So if you're not going to get it, you know, work for yourself.
I agree with that completely, but I just, like, I have a sister who just turned 21, and I encouraged her, you know, to experience life and do things that she enjoys and learn what it is that, you know, she really wants to do before deciding if you want to go to school. Because sometimes, I mean, I have managers and everything that never went to school, and, hey, they make pretty decent money, you know, six-figure jobs or whatever, and they're just like, oh, well, they were with the company for a while, they worked their way up, whatever, you know, what have you. But at the same time, I'm like, it's a matter of having a skill set and being able to master that more than it is having a diploma or a piece of paper. So that's my only suggestion when it comes to the education thing, because I have $92,000 in student loan debt that I'm never going to be able to pay back.
I worked in corporate America for a few years, and that was one of the worst experiences of my life. But anyway, it was a learning experience. While there, they was changing the company over and going through a paperless processing of claims that they were bringing in, the claims. And the guy who they had from the company to learn how to operate the whole paperless processing system was a black guy, was a young black guy. And I have much respect for him, because what this young brother did, he learned everything it was to know about it. And he was the only one who knew it from A to Z. And about 2 weeks before time for it to go live, he quit and told them he will only come back as an independent contractor on his own terms.
Can I
you
inject
know,
something
he
here?
He went to work for himself.
Can I inject something here? You guys,
right.
You're all going to be a little upset with me. Who do we still have on the line here? Brittany and who else?
Daniel.
Hello?
Daniel.
Pam, is Pam gone? Pam, have you left?
Yeah, I guess.
Brittany, you're still there. Cause Brittany...
No, she's still here. Sorry, I had the phone muted. I didn't know you were going to ask her a question. Yes, I'm here.
I wasn't going to ask a question. I just wanted to inject something. We kind of got off topic, guys, okay, because we're talking about education. The question was, how do we get the millennials to vote? How do we reach the millennials? And we started talking a lot about education. Not that it's not important, and I understand what you all are saying, but we're kind of off topic a little bit from show up or shut up. That was the topic for the evening. And then we start talking about the show up and shut up, leaning more into men and millennials. So I want to go back to how do we reach you? I don't have any idea. I don't know how to reach young people because I'm not a rapper, okay? I am a basketball fan, a sports fan, and they make plenty of money. But I do not choose to follow Kanye West, okay? Who's a rapper. And what's the boy down in Louisiana got all the gold in his mouth and the tattoos around his eyes? What's his name? Come on, somebody help me.
Okay,
hello?
Birdman. But let's turn it around, Noah, because the topic is not just how do we get the millennials engaged, but how do we get men engaged? You're not a millennial, but you're definitely a man. So how do we get the men engaged?
And I don't have the answer. I wish I did have a crystal ball and I had the answer. I don't have the answer because men think differently. Men have, depending on the man. First of all, where women are more dominant and outnumber us tremendously now. Okay, women outnumber men. I know here in Atlanta, at least in Atlanta, I know, easy 10-12 to 1. It's no doubt about it. So women are the more dominant factor. Maybe some men feel as though, well, you know what, I'm fighting an uphill battle. Maybe they're thinking more in terms of, not from a political standpoint, but unfortunately thinking about their loins more than they think about anything else. You know, because the men are becoming more of a rare commodity because women are so dominant. Look at how many women are running for office. Think about it.
And so because women are running for office, men are less inclined to vote?
That's what it's
about, getting the men to vote, getting the millennials to vote. What is it that's going on that, you know, that we can't reach them? And as a woman, I don't want to be told that because it's more women than it's men, then the men, you know, so does that mean women need to start dying off?
No.
Okay,
let me interject.
Go
ahead.
So
I think,
please.
So number one, I'm the father of 3 black boys. You know, I have 3 young men, and every day I try to be the best example I can be. None of us are perfect, but I at least,
sure,
whether it's how I treat their mother or when I vote, we traditionally vote on Tuesdays. We take our kids with us because we want them to be a part of that process. And there's a quote that I have in my home that says, it's better to build strong boys than to repair broken men. And that's a quote that Frederick Douglass once made, and that's absolutely where we are. And to answer your question about why don't more men vote, when I was in high school in 1995, the Million Man March happened. And in 2020,
mm-hmm,
we'll be at the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, I think black folks as a community – have struggled. But I think that, as you know, if you look statistically, black women are the most educated in the United States. They are.
Mm-hmm.
They have the most degrees. They're the most qualified. I mean, this is on paper. You all are more educated
mm-hmm.
than any other group of women, than
mm-hmm.
any group of men. I mean, like, it's there. Black men, on
mm-hmm.
the other hand, we have seen rates that in some areas more black men incarcerated than in institutions of higher learning. And I think one
mm-hmm.
of the challenges is to why the root of the problem is, you know, this space between the Million Man March and having this rededication to our community, our families, our children, our wives, it got hijacked. Like, you know, you got 9/11, you had Columbine, and we never really dealt with what black men were dealing with. Now, granted, black women right now and Latino women are two of the fastest growing populations in prisons, and that's alarming to me, and it's very disturbing to me. However, black men have been incarcerated at such alarming rates that the repairing of the minds and the hearts of our communities. I was appointed by Chief Justice Leah Sayers to the Georgia Supreme Court Commission
mm-hmm.
on Marriage,
mm-hmm.
Family, and Children, and she's no
mm-hmm.
longer there. But I'll say this in closing. One thing that I learned was that we have this vicious cycle of, you know, males, and I know it's become redundant, but black men that are not in the house, we've got to do a better job. When I say we, I mean the brother that's on the phone with me right now, myself,
mm-hmm.
other men that's out there that are doing well, that are doing okay. We got to do a better job of getting out of our own way and just getting pride out of the way and start finding a young man, no matter how difficult it is, and taking that young man under our wing, because there's a generation. The reason why gangs are increasing in recruitment right now is because no other person is going into where these kids are hurting and suffering and saying, I'm going to deal with this. I'm not just going to come for the weekend, but I want to be a part of your journey. So I think that's one of the root causes, is the fact that we haven't done a good enough job in being there for our young brothers. And, you know, life happens, you know, and it's not an excuse, but I think that's one of the root problems of what we're dealing with.
Can I ask you a question based on what you just said, Daniel?
Yes, ma'am.
Because what you're saying is that group of men that's in the prison and that's your age, I guess you would be what, generation?
I'm 39. I'm Gen X.
Okay.
I'm Gen X.
So you're Generation X, right. So you're that generation that came up when the Crips and the Bloods and the gangs and stuff was all going on.
Yes, ma'am.
So you was that young boy, 17, 18-year-old, who was looking for a male role model, a positive male role model. So with that in mind and knowing what you and your friends and your generation went through and what you were needing and what you were looking for out there, how is it so hard for you to understand and reach back to the generation behind you, because you already know, you just went through that?
I do though. I mean, yeah, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I am very involved in mentorship programs and, you know, supporting initiatives that deal with black male achievement. I was appointed to President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative. I'm more so just saying that no matter how much I do, all of us can do more. You know, it's
exactly.
I think
no,
is,
yeah, and I wasn't pointing you out specifically when I said you, but when I say you, I'm saying you as man, you as a man. You know, Noah's in a different generation. Noah's part of that
yeah.
baby boomer. So there were some things that his generation went through, but a lot of the baby boomers baby boomers had more two-parent families than the generation X.
Yes.
You know,
that is
so
correct.
So
yes.
They had those male role models, but it's the generation X and then this millennial generation where it's not so. And that was my question, not for you personally,
oh, yeah.
but for that generation. If you just went through that, because it's not like that was history for you. That's something you guys just went through. And so that feeling should still be fresh in you and make it even easier to reach out and pull that 17-, 18-, 19-, 20-year-old.
Mm.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the short answer is, and brother, I definitely didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, I think the short answer is, at the end of the day, I think we just have to do some soul searching, because, like he said, I'm sorry, brother, can you tell me your name again?
This is Noel, N-O-E-L.
Noel. So what what Noel said, I think Noel was spot on. I think that, you know, unfortunately, there's no answer. I think we need to dig deep in our soul. I mean, you know, we're in a time now where we clearly see the challenges that are going on. And, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's selfish reasons or we got our careers or we just don't have the time for it, I think we need to look on the inside and we need to see the black community, especially black males, is an endangered species. And until we see the urgency and the importance of doing that, you know, I don't have any. I wish I could tell you right now, here's the problem, here's the solution. But I agree with Brother Noel. It's more complicated, and I think we all have to look within and figure out what it is we can be doing better, not just for the folks we want to engage, but for the gentlemen that are around us that we hang out with. We've got to start pulling our buddies to the side the same way we want to go watch a football game and say, hey, brother, let's go down to this school and read with these kids. It has to just change, but it's going to have to be internal. It's not something that can be marketed to us. It's something that we're going to have to want to do.
You know, something that I think we as men must do, we must utilize something that the good Lord gave us. He gave us two ears and one mouth. Sometimes we need to shut the one and open up the two and just listen. Because, see, it took me a good little while. What's the noise in the background? Do we have a – can anybody hear that just like me? Hello?
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay, is it gone?
Yeah.
No. Okay, all right. Daniel, are you still there?
I'm here, but my phone is muted.
Okay. And, Brittany, are you still around?
Yes, I'm here. My phone is also muted.
Okay. All right. Well, my phone is not muted. Okay. Anyway, I think we need to listen. Daniel, I am a much older man than you are, but I also have three sons. My baby boy happens to be 43 years old. In fact, I'm looking for him to knock on the door in a few minutes or come on in the house. He's traveling, so he's going to be here. But my baby boy is 43 years old, and one thing that my sons told me is that what they learned from me is the fact of listening. I made them a promise of something. I left their mother some years back. We went our separate ways, but I made them a promise, no matter what, I'm always going to be there. Because that's something that we as men need to make sure that we a lot of these men are incarcerated because they had no other man to turn to. They had no role model, or the role model was the guy on the corner driving the big Mercedes Benz and slinging dope and wearing all and got the gold chains and the gold all in his mouth, and he's got a new rap song out, and the goal in life is to become a rapper. I'm not against all rappers, but come on, man, really? Really? I mean, that's your goal in life? You know, so in communicating with my sons about, I got a lot of static going on. I don't know who's here. Are we all there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
So in dealing with my sons in that way and trying to be a role model, they have told me many times, said, Poppy, you're a great role model. And I was nowhere near perfect. And Daniel, this might blow you away. I'm straight out of Compton, bro. Okay? I mean, I'm sorry that Compton, my hometown got ended up with a reputation like that. But I mean, elementary, junior high school, junior college, and senior college, which I didn't complete, all in Compton. All in Compton. I mean, so you can come from the hood. I don't know why you want to call Compton the hood, because it really ain't no hood, all right? Compton got his own airport, by the way, bro, if you didn't know that. You know, so tell me another hood you know that's got an airport. But it became famous because of a movie and also drive-by shootings, et cetera, you know, like, really? But I ended up with three sons because I got them out of that. We came to Atlanta when they were young. My baby boy was 8 years old when I moved to Atlanta. He is now senior vice president of a major television network. Really? And sits on the board of trustees of his college at 43 years old. Like, okay. Now, am I proud of that? You goddamn right I am. But it took the time to listen and let him express himself. My other boys, I have been that way, tried to be a mentor to the young men in my family, which means I haven't done enough. I haven't reached out enough. I've been selfish and restricting myself to the young men in my own family. That's who I want.
What about the men? What about the men that's in your own generation? Because
right.
even though the millennials are not voting, and I'm going to keep going right back to that topic.
I got you.
It's not
just
the millennials. It's the millennials and the males. The men just not out there. You know. So yes.
I don't have an answer to
the young guy, can you reach out to your generation?
I don't have an answer for that, Sandy. It's a topic. It's something that I must dwell on and search deep within. As I said, I don't have an answer to all the problems. I don't have an answer for that. I really don't.
You know, because
it is a legitimate concern.
Voting, a lot of the men that's not voting, it has nothing to do with, it's not
age.
Just the men that's coming from the, yeah, it's not just age, it's not just economic status.
It's
you know,
across
it's,
the board.
It's across the board.
I don't have an answer.
Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying.
I was going to say it's across the board, but that goes to the issue that I said earlier because let me just give a quick example. I know this is we're focusing on one issue, but one of my kids, you know, got caught watching pornography. Let me just put it out there, right, because I want to just have a real conversation.
Okay.
I got really upset, but I turned it into a teachable moment. The reason why I want to use that example is because for some reason there are conversations that men just don't have. It's just like if you want a brother to go get, you know, checked for prostate cancer, we just don't go to the hospital. It's just fear. But the reason why I bring up that example about my son really quickly is because when it happened, I had two choices. I could yell, be upset, take his phone. I could have did anything irrational, or I could turn it into a teachable moment. And I began to speak to him about how you treat women. I began to speak to him about daddy has made mistakes. I just really used that to open up and talk about how flawed I was. And I think sometimes we're so caught up in having these conversations that are so deep and serious that we don't have the conversations that are inviting. Like you mentioned the brother that was selling drugs, but you said you talked to him about, hey, brother, you got a skill set, you're marketing and you're doing stuff, and you just don't call it that, but you're an entrepreneur. I think we need to figure out ways to have the difficult conversations because I'm in a position right now where my son and I, who's 14 now, we have a much stronger relationship because that one conversation on something that, you know, he was doing, I didn't laugh at it like a man and say, oh, he's just a little boy, you know, every boy watches porn. No, I spoke to him as a father and said, this can become addictive. This is not the way you treat women, and this is some things that you have to understand about your integrity. Now, until we start having conversations across the board about some real serious issues, you can't talk to a brother about politics if you can't talk to a brother about if he ate that day. And we need to get back to really having simple conversations. And there's a quote that says, if you want to run fast, run alone. If you want to run far, run with others. We got to get back to that village mentality of getting more men to take on these responsibilities and have these conversations. And until we do that, I just don't really see it changing. And I hate to say it like that, but as a father, obviously I'm going to put my boys first. But at the end of the day, we have to do a better job because we're walking past these young men every day, and it's not getting any better. So we have to have these conversations.
Daniel, you said that you're 39 years old. I happen to be 71.
Yes, sir.
I am 71 years old, okay? I need to ask a question, and I'm very serious about this. How did I reach you? You're between 25 and 30, and 25 and 40 years old. How do I reach you? How do I relate to you? How do you relate to me? Quite frankly, when I was 25 years old, I don't want to hang out with somebody that's 70. You were too damn old. And now at 70, you're too damn young for me. What do we have in common What? No, seriously, what do we have in common? How can I reach you where you want to hear me? I can talk to my sons that way because I raised them. I get that part, okay? I can get to them through love and interaction because of our history together, okay? I can deal with them who are now 43. The middle one turned 45 yesterday, and the oldest one is 47. I got to get
okay.
it right now, yeah. Yeah, they're 40. So how do I reach the generation that is a lot younger? I've got nephews that are in California that are doing very, very well. But how do we relate?
Here's what you do. It's a simple answer. When I was 19, I met Maynard Jackson and C.T. Vivian and Reverend Lowry and these civil rights icons, and they took me under their wing early. And then one day Andrew Young came to me, Ambassador Young comes to me, and he said, "We spent a lot of time with you. I need you to get some of your friends together." I got some guys that I knew that were college buddies. I got some folks that were in the music industry. One of my friends played for the Falcons. And Andrew Young said, "I'm going to invite 10 people, and I want you to invite 10 people." And we had dinner. You know the conversation? It wasn't about civil rights. It wasn't about voting. It wasn't about, you know, being a good father, even though those are all very important. It was about relationships. It was brothers on one side of the table that, like you said, we were all 35 and under. And on the other side of the table, they were all 65 and older. So I think, you know, to answer your question, if you have some nephews that are doing very well in their space, you find out from your nephews, you say, "Look, I'm going to come down there for Thanksgiving. Everybody's going to be in town. I need you to get a couple of your buddies. And the day after, let's go bowling. And I just want to bring it together." I mean, you just have to create the space and be willing to have that conversation. So that's what I would do. I would just find out how to not just individually, because you're right. If you're at 71 years old, go to a 29-year-old and say, "Hey, brother, I just want to have lunch with you." They might look at you funny. But if you can go to somebody that has five other friends and say, "Hey, I got five buddies. We just want to go take you out to lunch. It's on us." I mean, most people ain't going to turn down free food. So you figure you create the space. And they might think it's just a lunch, but what you're doing is you're really feeding them knowledge as much as you feeding them something to eat. That's really the key. We got to start creating these spaces and not doing it in ways that's obvious. Because if they feel like you're going to come and preach to them, they're not going to do it. But if they feel like you're making bread and they can talk to you, then they'll open up a little bit more. And then the next two or three of them that you do, it'll turn into, "Hey, brother, I really want to talk to you about my marriage. I know you got a divorce before. I don't want to get a divorce. What could I be doing better?" They're not going to open up like that until they feel like there's a space of trust and confidentiality. But once it's there, I've had grown men crying to me because they didn't want to get divorced, but they've said, "Hey, brother, man, I just need somebody to talk to." But it's only because I took time cultivating that relationship, and we got to get back to cultivating relationships with our brothers so that they feel safe enough to be able to speak to us about whatever they're going through.
You know, I agree with you 100% on that, Daniel. I'm working with this young guy who's he has a barber shop, and what he decided to do was reach out to the men in the community, the men that come in his barber shop. And he started doing what he calls Monday night football, what is it called? Tailgating conversation.
Okay.
So on Monday night, they come to his barbershop. He has food for them. He has dinner, not just a sandwich. He has a complete meal for them, including dessert. And he have the game on. But they sit down and they talk about everything. Because what he said is, what's the most comfortable place for men to sit down and talk, where they can talk about anything? He said a barbershop. How do we get them together? He said, let's get them together and let's talk about what's happening in the community, how we can reach the young fellas. And what he started off with just him and, you know, older guys. But then after a couple of weeks, he said, "Now I want each one of y'all to bring a younger, whether it's a son, a nephew, a neighbor, or whoever, a coworker, bring a younger person in on the conversation." And he's continued to do that. You know, so I agree with you. You're going to have to find some ways to reach out. And it doesn't always have to be something that's going to cost a lot of money or some just something basic and simple, but that connection is going to have to be made some kind of way. And I'm listening to this conversation, and we're almost out of time, but I'm wondering, is that why so many women are out here voting? Because we have those conversations with each other. You know, we talk to each other about, you know, everything. Everything, you know, and men say we share everything, but you're right. Women talk to each other about everything. There's no topic that we don't talk about with each other. We share everything with each other, you know. So, and I wonder if because we're willing to share with each other like we share, whether it's with the younger girls or with or our own age, is that why more of us are out here at the polls now?
Well, I'll say this because we're up against time, but I think that you're absolutely right. Women, you know, from what I have observed, have been more open about sharing intimate details and conversations, whereas men, whether it's pride or, you know, we trying to be tough, we don't want to be too sensitive in front of our brothers. It's like we got to, you know, I think one of the biggest thing is with women, it's more of an accountability to each other. Whereas with men, it's kind of like, you know, each one, you know, like kind of do your own thing. And unfortunately, if until we get to the point where we can be closer and confide in each other, it's going to be hard for us to feel accountable to one another.
You know, I went through a situation, and I know we are short on time, but I was involved in a situation at my church with a group of men. It was like eight of us, and forget what the topic was, but it was a series of classes that we were going through. And I found it to be quite enlightening. I was the eldest person there, but the men that I was dealing with were of a younger generation. It was a mixture. And we opened up very, 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 very well. The problem is, and I put this on myself, I have not followed up with some of these guys, and I really enjoyed dealing with them and communicating with them during that time in those classes that we had. But because, and I have their phone numbers, I haven't followed up. That ain't on them. That's on me. This conversation.
No, that's going to be your homework assignment for the week.
I got
for
it.
You to reach out and start following up. Guys,
I
hate
promise.
To cut this conversation off. This has been a great conversation. Daniel, how can we get in touch with you? How if people wanted to reach you and get in touch with you more, how do they go about getting in touch with you?
They could just go to danielblackman.com. That's danielblackman.com. You can click on a link that says Coffee with Daniel. That gets you directly to me. I'd meet with you or I'll respond to your email. And all my social media is on my website.
Right,
well,
there.
We really thank you for being here tonight. It's been a great conversation.
Yes.
And we'll probably be calling on you again soon. And everybody, make sure you go out and vote. Brittany, are you still on the line? Thank you for joining us in this conversation. Pam, thank you for joining us in this conversation.
Yes, you're welcome.
Either you have anything you want to say before we close out, we have about 3 minutes.
No, thank you.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Noah?
I'll just say, Pam, you know, you're a friend of mine. You raised a beautiful young lady. Terrific.
Thank you.
Be proud of yourself with your daughter. That's a sharp lady you got there.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the conversation very much myself. We will do it again. I intend to be somewhat of a regular, if at all possible. We just keep in touch with the topics, okay? And if
well,
you
thanks
voted,
everybody for
vote.
Coming. Make sure you go out and vote, and let's help Stacy bring this on home on Tuesday.
I got you, babe. Talk to you soon.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.